Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. The US-New Zealand Health Innovation Symposium was held this week at the University of Auckland. The keynote speaker was Dr. John Wenberg, an emeritus professor from the University of Dartmouth. And he joins us now. Dr. Wenberg, what did you come to New Zealand to talk about?
It's basically the research that we've been doing over, it's almost 30 years now, comparing healthcare practices in one geographic location to another, one community. And basically, what we've been finding is extraordinary differences in the way healthcare is delivered depending on where you live, and not, unfortunately, on the illness you have or the preferences that you might have. Now, let me try to be a little more specific. We're talking here, for example, about such things as elective surgery for knee replacements, tonsillectomies, and other forms of procedures that are really should involve a good deal of discretion and a good deal of preference issues on the patient side.
What do you mean by that, discretion, preferences?
By preferences, basically, well, let me try to explain it maybe with a simple example. It's not a simple example since it's not a good example for the person that has it. But in any case, a woman who has breast cancer, basically early stage breast cancer, has two treatment options that have been tested through clinical trials. One is a simple lumpectomy, just removing the tumor locally. The other is to remove the whole breast, called mastectomy. Now, these two procedures have pretty much the same effect on survival, but they have very, very different effects on the quality of life and different impacts. And as it turns out, some women prefer one procedure, other women prefer the other procedure. And getting the information about the risks and benefits and the different outcomes to the patient is absolutely key if we're going to try to make sure that patients get involved. Now, what we've seen in our research is that the rate at which lumpectomy is performed or mastectomy is performed is way out of whack. So in some communities, almost all cancers will be treated with lumpectomy, and in others, just the reverse. And when you trace it back, it turns out to be a lot of it associated with local medical opinion. So women really aren't getting the case straight in many cases. So our research has been trying to move not just beyond describing the variation, but also trying to get patients actively involved in the decision process, getting them to understand the treatment options, and getting them to understand that the choice should be up to them in terms of their preferences. And this has had some pretty remarkable results where we've seen a radical reduction in some variation, but even more important, decisions that really reflect the patient's underlying point of view, preferences. For example, in the case of the breast cancer, which we've been discussing, some women really don't want to have radiation and don't want to have constant threat of recurrence, which is what happens with lumpectomy. Doesn't happen very often, the recurrence, but it's enough, so we have to keep monitoring it. Some women would rather get it done with and have a mastectomy, but then they've got to face the problem of loss of breast. And so you can get a picture of the trade-offs that we're talking about.
When the outcomes are the same in terms of the survivability of the patient, mm-hmm. the likelihood the patient will survive, why is it an issue if there's such big variations, or is it simply it's interesting to discover why?
Well, it's basically an ethical principle about informed choice, basically. I don't think anybody would really want to say the doctor should decide for the patient which treatment they get without asking them. I mean, that's the extreme.
The doctors are always going to have an opinion of their own, aren't they, as to what they've seen in their experience works best or doesn't work best?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a problem that needs to be overcome.
And your research shows that the variation depends on geographical?
No, the geographical picture comes in because what we're doing is measuring different medical communities.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important point. And our studies have been all organized around catchment areas for hospitals so that people in community A will be generally going to hospital A and B going to B.
Does this translate across the whole medical field, all manners of treatment? I mean, are we talking about doctors prescribing two types of medicine to treat something, that sort of thing?
We haven't done as much work on that, but certainly I would be surprised if it wasn't the case, because what we're dealing here with is a tradition of delegating to doctors' decisions. And physicians clearly have different opinions about what works and doesn't work, and it often follows specialty lines. So if you go to a orthopedic surgeon that does knee replacements with arthritis of the knee, you're very likely to get a recommendation for arthritis for a knee replacement if it's bad enough. Now here's a very, very interesting study that I think I can get the gist of pretty quickly, and that is a study was done in Canada where a whole region was essentially surveyed to find all the people who were eligible for knee replacement according to evidence-based criteria, severe arthritis, and x-ray changes saying it's okay. And then yet another diagnostic test, if you want to call it that, was done. Namely, a decision aid was offered to the patients asking, take a look at this and tell me whether you do or do not want the surgery. And it turned out that only 15% of people that met the evidence-based criteria actually preferred it. And if you don't sort that out, if you don't go to the trouble of figuring out who wants it and who doesn't want it, you end up operating on the wrong patient, in this case, 4 times out of 5.
Does this also suggest that there's a disconnect between doctors in day-to-day practice or even doctors in hospitals and medical science?
Well, sometimes the science itself isn't that good. I mean, there is a good deal of variation, which is can be explained almost entirely on disagreements about the reasons for doing something. The things we've been talking about so far, the theory is pretty strong, and the evidence happens to be pretty good that these different...
Do you find with the greater access to knowledge, particularly in Western countries, thanks to the internet, that it's becoming less?
Let me put it this way. Patients are becoming much more curious and interested in what's going on. The question about getting the gist of the dilemma right is not always easy, because the internet is full of advocacies for position A and B. Some of them are financially motivated. Some of them are just because people, you know, had good results and want to let everybody know about it.
There's a lot of just straight misinformation up there, isn't there?
Exactly.
Let's be honest, yeah.
But I think the general point that you're saying is that people are becoming much more demanding to be informed, and that's a really good trend. And I think some of these issues are going to be easier. And I want to emphasize one other thing, is that there are strong leaderships among professions. The doctors are understanding this and moving towards this kind of resolution of what we call shared decision-making throughout the United States right now.
You've arrived at an interesting time in New Zealand. Our papers this week had on the front page that we're in crisis with a shortage of doctors. Do you suffer the same issue in America?
Not really. not really.
Before we went on air, what did you say to us? You said, I wish we could send you some of the doctors we had.
I'd have to build the case.
So it's not an issue over there? I mean, you don't suffer from massive shortages?
Not at all. The problem in the United States is that we have overutilizing a lot of acute care hospitals. And acute care hospitals have collected large numbers of specialists on their staffs, so that we have many, many more medical specialists, many taking the role that here would be a primary care role. And that leads to more intensive care, higher frequency of care, more visits, more diagnoses, more costs. That's where we are. And yet, if you look at across the United States at some places that have very high reputations for high quality, I don't know if you know about the Mayo Clinic, for example, sort of worldwide. The Mayo Clinic basically, for its population, uses only about 60% as many physicians as, say, doctors or institutions in New York City or Los Angeles. So it's those benchmarks of efficiency that make me skeptical about the general suggestion that we need more doctors. And by the way, that's also been going on in the United States, even though they don't migrate anywhere.
Yeah, right.
We were discussing where all the doctors go. Maybe it's like losing a pen or a lighter or something like that. They just go somewhere you don't know where.
Well, they go to Australia out in Queensland.
That's right. And the mining towns. Look, thank you so much for coming.
You're
and
welcome.
We hope you have an enjoyable visit.
That was Dr. John Wenberg. After the break, we head to Splore City.